You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Linda, it looks like that teenage sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein and his recent suspicious death case at the Manhattan Correctional Center is taking all the air out of the room with respect to the media this week.
Well, lately it certainly is. And, you know, I mean, it's a big case. There was a lot of people that probably would have gone down with him and that are breathing a big sigh of relief at this time.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that they should be breathing a sigh of relief because it's not over. Bill Barr, the Attorney General, is going to move forward with this investigation beyond this major setback. But, you know, and there are no excuses for it. You know me, I work a lot of corrections cases and death cases and quite a few hangings. And yeah, we do have hangings in jail facilities across the United States, but not like this one.
Well, this one has so many interesting facets to it. And the newest twist on the case is one that, you know, we really predicted, is that the guards weren't doing their job. They were overworked, understaffed, working a lot of hours, a lot of overtime, and they didn't check on him as they recorded that they did, which is falsifying a document.
Well, I think what the investigation is showing, at least as far as the present, is that maybe they were sleeping on duty and falsifying those records. But regardless, there are so many things that happened that were wrong on so many different levels. Let's just talk about the suicide issue first. If he is demonstrating suicidal ideations, in other words, he's expressing either in manner, in deed, or verbally, or whatever, that he is suicidal, he needs to be maintained in a suicide-resistant cell and not returned to general population after a week or so of being under psychiatric observation, because you're just not going to lose your suicidal thoughts in a week.
Well, you know, and I have somewhat of a theory about that. The very first time that they found him with thumbprints on his neck, you know, whose thumbprints were those? Because most people don't physically strangle themselves with their own hands.
That's it's not impossible.
Yeah, it is impossible, and that's not how people commit suicide. His jail roommate at that time was actually an ex-law enforcement officer, big
huge,
bulky
muscular guy.
Yeah, very muscular, who, these guys don't like pedophiles, Ron.
And you know what? The guy was in prison for 4 counts of homicide on a bad drug deal that went down.
He's not a nice guy. Yeah, he's not a nice guy. And the thing is, you've got a very rich guy who is a child molester, a pedophile, a child trafficker in the cell with him. That's never going to go well. So my thought is that first time was somebody teaching this guy a little bit of what's coming. I think they scared the heck out of Epstein, and he understood that he was going to get convicted. Either way, he understood he was going to be there for some time, and there was nothing good that was going to happen to him in that particular institution.
I think the charging documents, if he were convicted on all the counts that are in those federal charging documents, he was looking at doing a minimum of 45 years. Even if you were to cut that in half and credit for, you know, good behavior, so to speak, he was not going to get out of there until he was well into his 70s. And when you think about the pressure on that guy, the humiliation, being found out, having to be convicted for all those offenses, and of course, I think you put your finger on it a second ago, child molesters, pedophiles are at the very bottom rank of people that are hated within the prison system, and they have to put those people usually in PC or protective custody for the rest of their time while they're incarcerated. But the thing that I think the conspiracy theorists are pointing out, and I am by far a conspiracy theorist, but I certainly look at reality, and that is he was so hooked up with so many people in prominent political and governmental positions. Literally a prince in Great Britain, our former president of the United States, the former first lady and secretary of the state, and former presidential candidate back in 2016, Hillary Rodham Clinton, a whole bunch of other people. And this guy had a lot to talk about if he wanted to work out a deal with the federal government. And you know the federal government always wants to listen. They never close a blind ear to someone like that. So, you know, if he would have ratted out those people, there would have been some tremendous people falling. I'm not saying that's gone yet, because now they're doing search warrants. They went out to the Virgin Islands, to his big island there, the Orgy Island, as they called it, where probably the great majority of this stuff took place. And I guess they're getting computers and they're pulling boxes of information out of there. Who knows if they're going to pull some videotapes? Who knows if there were secretly concealed cameras in those rooms, and this guy was trying to make an insurance policy to make sure that he wasn't going to go to prison for a long time. I don't think that's conspiratorial talking about it. I think, given this guy's personality, it's a possibility that it really did occur.
Well, I think it's definitely a possibility. You know, it's an interesting case. It's very sad that this ended the way that it did for all kinds of reasons. I mean, The main reasons, of course, is the victims, and they want to have their day in court, and they have the right to face their person that they're accusing. But, you know, it's the public seems to be titillated by this type of thing, and they want to hear more of the dirt. So, you know, we have all kinds of different views looking at this. I, for myself, I really would have liked to have known if there were politicians or people that are leaders in society that were involved, because then I don't want them to be leaders. And I think that that's something that I would really have liked to known. But, you know, we're going to find out what we find out. And it's, you know, it's just wherever things lead and whatever they can find out. I think that William Barr is extremely angry that this took place, and heads have already rolled over it. So, well, there's a lot more to be said about this. We're not done.
Well, you know, as always, I'm interested in the forensic side of this and the corrections practices side of this. And like I said, this went wrong on so many different levels. First of all, you know a guy that has already expressed suicidal ideations. He needs to be in a suicide-resistant cell. He needs to be in a suicide smock. You know, what's a suicide smock? It's kind of like those packing blankets, you know, those...
Quilted.
Thank you. Yeah. Quilted packing blankets. Only they're made out of really strong, like, ballistic fabric, so you can't tear them whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's like ripstop. And we put them in there naked, except with that smock on, because it functions as a blanket and an insulator. And there's no way that you can manipulate that thing to hang yourself, to put it around your neck, or, you know, do anything like that at all. So they didn't do that with him. Then after a week or so of being under psychiatric observation, they take him out of the suicide-resistant cell, and they put him in a two-person cell with a double bunk bed, a vertical bunk bed. And then they take the roommate that was assigned to him, and they take him out of that room. And by the way, the room they put him in, the camera to surveil him was broken. And they had to have known that before they put him in that room. Now listen, a person that has been suicidal and they take him off a suicide watch, the last thing that you're going to do with that person is put them in a room all by themselves with a double bunk. You're going to put them, and you've seen these before, Linda, in prisons where they have it's a slab. It's a raised slab of concrete. Okay, and they put your mattress on top of that, and the reason that they do that is so you can't affix anything to that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the ceilings are too high to affix anything.
Correct.
So, yeah, I don't believe in that particular jail they had cameras that went into the cells, but they did have cameras that went up and down the hallways. So, you know, I think that that's probably really what ended up burning the guards there, because you could see clearly that they didn't go check on him.
Right.
And
well, that's what you do. You go
sure,
back over,
you go over the
and I've
tapes.
Done this many times. You go back over all the videotapes, and of course they're all time stamped, and you take a look at the time stamps, and then you stop it, and you've already got the log, you know, which is the observation log of the inmates, and you say, okay, well at 3:40 Officer Smith stated that he was at the cell and he checked on inmate Jones. And then you just look at the video camera and, you know, you look at the tape and you know that that didn't happen.
Blank.
No,
nobody
you know what?
There.
But I do want to correct you on one thing. Yes, you're right that they do have cameras that look up and down the halls and in the main pod areas and things like that. But a lot of cells these days, especially in where he was housed, which is called the SHU, S-H-U, for a special housing unit, they actually have cameras that look into the cell.
Well,
They're not necessarily in the cell itself,
no.
But they're outside in the hallway facing the cell.
I specifically heard that his cell did not have that. That's why I mentioned that.
Okay.
And why
put him there?
Well, sure. I mean, there was, like you say, there was a fail on so many levels that, you know, it's the perfect storm, right, which was created, and he took advantage of it. And interestingly, he had had two roommates. That second roommate was put in there very shortly before he died and taken out of there just hours before he died.
Correct.
So I haven't heard the reason why he was taken out of there either.
I haven't either.
So, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there right now, and you know, we don't know at this point in time if some of those things are true as far as, you know, was that perfect storm created for him so that he could take advantage of it? Or, you know, some people say that he was murdered. I don't know the answer to all these things. What the coroner said is that it's suicide, so we'll have to end up seeing how everything shakes out with this. But it's definitely interesting, and it has taken the air out of the room. But you know what? There are a lot of other things happening in the world that are important right now
One of the things that I want to talk about is this significant increase in our law enforcement officers being threatened with harm, their families being threatened with harm, and then also a significant increase in officers being shot in the line of duty. And we just had 6 officers shot in Philadelphia. And then just the day before, we had that California Highway Patrol officer that was shot and killed by that suspected Vago motorcycle gang member. And you know, Linda, that shooting of that CHP officer happened on Highway 15 in Riverside County, not too far away from where our mutual offices are located. So
yes,
that brings it kind of close to home.
Yeah, I was surprised that happened right there. It's really disturbing to see the trend that we have right now with people just they're no longer fearing officers. They don't have the respect for them that they used to. They don't fear them like they used to. And why would that be?
Because there's no repercussions for that.
Exactly. There is no accountability for people's actions. And I place this blame squarely in two places, and that is on judges and on our legislators, because they continue to want to make the police officers be the ones that really have to defend their actions rather than the criminal have to defend his actions. They have turned our criminals into the victims and the police officers into the criminals. And it just couldn't be more topsy-turvy. What's happening in all of America right now, in every situation with crime, in my opinion, is that because of our bleeding heart politicians and judges, they are letting everybody off. They have some sort of a social experiment going on where they think it's better to be kinder and gentler, and these people will just realize their mistakes and clean themselves up. And guess what? That is not going to happen.
No, and just to talk a little bit about the statistics, because I ran the statistics today, and we've had 32 law enforcement officers in the United States shot and killed by firearms. We've had countless more wounded in the line of duty. And I think just to put it in perspective, we have almost 50,000 assaults on peace officers in the United States every single year on a historical basis, with about 14,000 of the almost 50,000 being injured in the line of duty. And those are deliberate assaults on our law enforcement personnel. So when you take a look at 32 officers being shot and killed in the line of duty, that's phenomenal. Okay, that is large. It's not as large as back in 2016 when I wrote The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police book. That was the highest we had since 1972, and before that, since the Bonnie and Clyde days in the early 1930s. But the assaults on police officers are rising, the shootings of police officers are rising, and I also have to blame a complicit news media for constantly putting out these false narratives. Did you notice that they brought back the Michael Brown, Darren Wilson shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, and the father, who's a parolee, is you know, bringing that up again? He's a very hateful person. And also, which really was disturbing, is presidential candidates Kamala Harris, yes, who used to be an attorney general, yes, in the state of California.
A very poor one at that.
A very poor one, yes. And she was hated as a district attorney in San Francisco County. She is calling it murder, and Elizabeth Warren, another socialist 2020 presidential candidate, is calling it murder as well.
And again, here they are ginning up public opinion for a narrative that is absolutely false, and I just think that that is the most irresponsible thing that you can do. What do you think, as a president, these people would do? They would do the same exact things. This case has been adjudicated. It has been proven that Michael Brown attacked the officer. It has been proven. I mean, he was a thug in so many ways, Ron. And he caused everything that happened to himself, and he tried to cause the harm and death of the police officer at the same time. Yet, here they are, after everything was said and done, and not once, not twice, but three times, that case was proven that the officer was innocent, and they gin it up again, and they say that it was murder.
Well, actually, Linda, it was five different agencies
even,
and entities,
even
and even I analyzed that case. That was one of the cases I analyzed, and it's chapter two in my book. And so, but everybody, as far as the state, the local, the state, the federal agencies, the FBI, Department of Justice, all of the agencies that investigated the Michael Brown, Officer Darren Wilson shooting were all in sync. They all found the same evidence, and all of it exonerated Officer Wilson and the people that made up and lied initially and made up hands up don't shoot, which never happened. That still remains with us today. Okay, and you still see protesters with their hands up in the air and carrying protest signs saying hands up, don't shoot. And that was a complete falsehood.
Well, and for them to, again, bring this up and make an untrue narrative is just really disturbing, because all they're trying to do is get public sentiment to go in the direction of, I don't know what it is they're trying to accomplish, but we cannot have dishonest people like that in our government.
Well, I will tell you, and I agree with you, but to me, it's right in your face why they're doing it. They are trying, because they have no policies. They have nothing going on with how they want to move America forward as a presidential candidate. They are trying to suck minority resonance away from President Trump and put it in their corner. Okay, just by these racist, false narrative comments that they're making. And I absolutely agree with you. These are no people that we want in high leadership positions in the United States.
Nope. Would you like another cup of coffee?
You darn right.
All righty.
spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Linda, have you been paying attention to the California Department of Education and seeing this new history curriculum that's being proposed for classes K through 12 on how they are looking at history and how they're identifying certain things, such as capitalism?
No, I have not. You mentioned it to me, but I have not had a chance to read that.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a frost my socks moment. So you've got 13 professors and educators that got together in sort of a task force to redo the curriculum on how United States history is taught and portrayed in grades K through 12, but obviously at different educational levels. But the thing that is so bothersome is that they are defining in the curriculum capitalism as an oppressive ideology that is equivalent to white supremacy, racism, and what they refer to as patriarchal oppression.
I mean, first of all, that's completely untrue. And secondly, it's as dangerous of a philosophy as you could teach to our children. So what you're teaching our children, okay?
Not theirs.
Right. Our children, what you are teaching them is that what America is a very bad place, and that we need to change it, again, back to that kinder general, kinder and gentler society where we should share everything and everybody should be equal. Now, I'm saying everybody should be equal. That's not the issue. Everybody should be equal in the eyes of the law. The fact is God didn't make us all equal, so we could have that whole discussion. But to teach our children this kind of garbage after what this country has accomplished and has been through to get through to those accomplishments and to get to where we are today, which, by the way, is, you know, we hit a peak and it seems to me like we're in a lot of ways going backwards here.
Well, this is all Marxist language.
Absolutely.
Okay? And obviously these teachers' unions have always steered way to the left. But this goes beyond just liberalism and clearly pushes into past the threshold and goes well into Marxism and Marxist ideology. And so what they're saying is that the basis of America and how we move forward as a country, which has always been capitalism, and by the way, it'll always be capitalism because this will never become a Marxist nation like the Soviet Union, like China, like, you know, the old Soviet Union. Now we call it Russia, like Venezuela, like Cuba, like some of these, you know, African nations. We will never be that. But the only reason that we have our public school system and the freedoms that we have in our public school system is because of capitalism. It's because of people getting paid to teach schools, to develop curriculum, good curriculum, and our military people and our law enforcement people fighting for the freedoms of speech in this country. That's why these schools exist, or else we just run it like China and Russia and tell everybody what to think.
And that's exactly what they want to do, Ron. And when you say it will never be that way, you have to think of this very long-term plan that they have had for some time and that they continue to have. And they're taking it one step further all the time. In our generation, we had no crying rooms in school. I mean, we really manned up in school. And now you have all these safe spaces and the poor kids, somebody hurt their feelings, and oh, that police officer in my coffee shop is making me feel threatened, those types of things. Now what you have is you have small kids with very sponge-like minds who are picking up everything and believing these authority figures, and they're being taught that what we do in America, our very basis for our American society, is racist and white supremacist and all absolutely. The other things that you said, and they're going to grow up with those thoughts. And here's what else happens that scares me. You have parents that are completely disengaged in what their children are learning in school. Why are they disengaged? They're too busy. They're too busy with their work. They're too busy with their outside activities, their clubs, whatever it is they're busy with. Everybody has a different reason. It doesn't matter the reason. We are not having the same attention to our children and paying attention to everything that they do as they did in the past, as my mom did, as your mom did.
Well, you know what's happening is you're exactly right. The parents are disengaged completely. We don't have as many two-parent families as we used to. The single-parent families are working overtime. Some of them are working a couple of different jobs. And so they can't physically be a part of the PTA or go to school board meetings and something like that. So when that happens, little by little, as you said, the curriculum starts changing and we start dumbing down our youth. And you and I have had a couple of coffee conversations where we have talked about the fact, and I don't think a lot of people know this, I'll just say it again. They don't teach civics in school anymore. They stopped doing that. And so what is civics all about? It's how government is run. It's about the rule of law. It's about the protectors of the rule of law and the enforcers of the rule of law who, guess what, are law enforcement. And when you don't teach that anymore, and then you start entering in with these false narratives about capitalism being an oppressive ideology, and you get into this Marxist language, we're in really big trouble because we've dumbed the kids down. We put them in safe places. They're intolerant. They're disengaged from each other. They're controlled by social media and their cell phones. And this new curriculum, which is very worrisome, Linda, it lionizes the Marxist radical and militant organizations like the Black Panthers, like Black Lives Matter, a bunch of anti-Semitic groups, the Third World Order, and it actually encourages these kids to join protest groups.
Well, they are brainwashing our children. And how do you stop this? It's through the parents. The parents have to saying no, absolutely not, that they will not tolerate this. But my fear is, and I know I'm right, and I don't want to be right, is that they are not going to even know. Most parents will not pay attention. There are going to be very good parents who will pay attention. There are people that are engaged with their kids. But the world has changed. And we're letting the schools be our babysitters, and we are not paying attention to what is happening in those schools and what they're teaching. And the other thing that they did is they stopped teaching history in the way that history happened. So they
real history. They
exactly,
do revisionist history.
Yes, they rewrite history to be politically correct or to make it be however they want it to be so that you think what they want you to think. This is so completely dangerous, and this is the start of socialism. It is the start of Marxism, and we are doing it by brainwashing our youngest, most vulnerable, and our most precious assets in our country, and that is where they are going to win over time.
Well, as we've said before, the United States is an extremely strong country. But the way that you defeat the United States, and they figured it out a long time ago with Marxism, the only way you can defeat the United States is defeat them with their own people from within. And
exactly.
That's kind of the stuff that's happening. You know, I wanted to mention one more thing that this new curriculum is advocating, and that is it advocates for illegal aliens to be able to vote in school board elections. So they're actually telling these kids, this is at the high school level now, that they should be advocating for illegal aliens who have no rights to vote whatsoever in the United States, but to allow them to vote in school elections. What do you think that's going to do? Okay, they are going to vote for things that they want illegal aliens to have.
sure.
Right? And so this just perpetuates this whole anti-illegal immigration argument, and it's just wrong.
Parents in California need to really, really pay attention to this, and they need to speak up. And they may think it's just, well, you know, my kid is he's in fifth grade already, he's going to be out in a few years. No, you've got to speak up now, because this is the future of this country. This is your children's future and their children's, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. It's their future that is being stolen from them bit by bit by bit by these 13 kind of people who have an agenda. And for the love of me, I don't know why they have this agenda.
Well, I know our friends in California that can go on to the California Department of Education site, and you can look up the curriculum just like I looked up the curriculum, and you can actually just cut to the chase, and you can hit the contact button. You want to contact the California Department of Education, and you can voice your complaint there against this new curriculum. And it's right there. There's links to all the curriculum, so it's not like they're trying to hide something, but they're just not doing any public service announcements in California where, you know, you see it on TV and said, oh, by the way, this is what we're doing with your new history curriculum throughout the state of California. They're not saying that. They're being transparent in one way. And, well, we have it up on the website. And if you were interested in it all, you have to go.
Yeah, how many people do you think go to their website?
Yeah. Nobody.
And where is the teachers' union on this?
Oh, I mean,
of course. Why? Why would they be for it? That is, to me, that is absolutely the worst, most dangerous union that there is in that state. Well, there's a few bad ones in there, but one of the worst in that state. They are not for our children. They are for their own particular interests and not for your and my children. And that is what is really, really upsetting. People need to understand that. And, you know, listen, I'm no conspiracy theorist, Ron. I don't like the whole conspiracy theory thing. But this is blatant. It's in your face. It's happening every day. And your freedoms are being taken away.
Well, you know, let me just add one thing, because I have some personal history with the California Teachers Union, the CTA, the California Teachers Association. Many years ago, I had an opportunity. You remember I was a division dean, and I ran a police academy in California. And so it was associated with a community college district. And I was constantly going at loggerheads with the president and vice president of that community college because they did not like law enforcement. We needed to change what we were doing there. All of the law enforcement agencies and the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training were telling them to change. I was their, you know, beacon of hope, so to speak, and that's why I came into that job. And they would set me up against the California Teachers Union, and I remember having conversations with the president of that chapter, and he told me straight up front, he said, you know, Dr. Martinelli, we'll be here a lot longer than you will be, and we're going to run this place the way we want to run this place. And basically, they scared the hell out of the college president and the vice president, and, you know, and I just wasn't going with it. I was sticking up for my law enforcement agencies and what we call California Post at the time. But that taught me a valuable lesson. As a person who'd been involved with education my whole life as a teacher, even when I was on the job, you know, as a police officer and everything like that, I was always working part-time as a teacher and a professor. And becoming an administrator was a totally different paradigm for me. And when I saw how scary the California Teachers Association was and how much power they wielded, at least at the college level, that was a really scary wake-up call for me. And it hasn't changed. It, to me, it sounds like it's gotten worse, Lynn.
Well, look at what happened with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, they slapped him down like a little girl, and he never stood back up again.
Recovered. And by the way, I have to say, they were right. They were there longer than me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty scary what's going on, and people really need to pay attention in that state, and they need to say something and speak up.
I'm with you.
Well, I want to switch over to a little bit of conversation about China, Ron. I just find this fascinating. As somebody who deals with China all the time, I find the entire events that are happening with the tariff war and with Hong Kong to be really interesting. And, you know, when President Xi took over in China, they got rid of term limits for him. So he could effectively be a very long-term leader there. And he was supposed to usher China into this huge new era of being a big world power. And things are falling apart a little bit for him over there, actually a lot. President Trump has, you know, put on his tariffs. And the thing is that people have to realize that we import about $540 billion of goods from them, but they only import like 100 and some billion from us.
Oh, I didn't know it was that little from us.
It's a very big difference, which is what Trump was complaining about back when he ran for president. So China has a lot more to lose, and what has happened is that investors have been just putting billions of dollars now into Vietnam and other countries rather than China. China has had to nationalize three of their banks in the recent few weeks to bail them out. They are having financial difficulties from what Trump has done. And there's people in our country who are, you know, poo-pooing what he's done and saying that it's not the right thing. But it is the right thing. And he has made a big dent and a big difference. And the other thing at the same time that's happening is with Hong Kong, where when he wanted to bring the prisoners over to be tried, you know, on their soil.
Oh, the extradition issue.
Right.
Sure.
It started kind of a wave among students, but now it's really brought in the entire population of Hong Kong. And Hong Kong has pretty much decided at this point that this is their time to fight for their freedom. Xi was taking their freedoms a little bit at a time and thinking that it really didn't matter, but they're noticing. And they have made this stand. And now I think that Xi is worried that this may spread to mainland China. And with people now asking for their freedom, don't forget that they are a very big communist country. And people in Hong Kong have more freedom. And will that spread over to the mainland? He's got some issues to deal with.
Well, you know, I'd like to talk with you more about that because, and I love talking with you about things like China and world trade because that's part of what you do for a living and you are so on top of that. And a lot of that's not in my wheelhouse. So let's just have our next cup of coffee and continue that conversation.
Okay.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Hey, Lynn, I got my last cup of coffee and a couple of Oreo cookies. So, listen, I just wanted to continue our conversation about China. So, what do you think's going on with regards to the Chinese and Hong Kong? Because, as you remember, that's a protected territory. What they call a special finance zone, because you know Hong Kong is sort of like the Geneva, Switzerland of Asia, and in 1997 the Brits gave up control of China.
1997,
to the Chinese, and I personally always thought that was going to be a huge mistake, and it looks like now that's what's happening, and of course the Chinese always play the long game. Right. So, like you said, little by little, they've been taking the freedoms away
exactly.
from the people in Hong Kong. And I think when they saw the extradition proposal by the Chinese mainland, I think that appropriately scared them.
Well, and, you know, so what are the options here? The people are going to keep protesting. They haven't really calmed down on it at all. In fact, if anything, they've gotten more vocal. And so what are Xi's options? I mean, would he invade Hong Kong?
Well, you notice they had pictures of hundreds of military trucks full of troops, but they were just on the outskirts.
They're on Shenzhen. They're right. They're doing training exercises.
Well, no, they're doing intimidation is what they're doing. But also, you don't put that many soldiers in trucks unless you plan to deploy them if everything goes south. But listen, I wanted to talk about, just briefly, and this is definitely in your wheelhouse, about this trade imbalance between the United States and China. And I thought maybe you could help me out a little bit with that.
Well, I'll try.
Okay. Well, I know that you do a lot of business in China, but now because of what's been going on and the tariff war and all of the stuff between our country and China, you've been outsourcing at other countries like Vietnam, Indonesia, India. Can you talk to me a little bit about what
Vietnam,
you've been doing?
Vietnam, South Korea, for the most part. Vietnam has taken a lot of the... business that was China business. Now, what's interesting, I have a friend from Vietnam, and she tells me that China's really getting that business anyway. I'm not sure that I believe that. But investors, like I said, the foreign investors have put $10.8 billion into Vietnam. The imports fell 5.6% compared to a year ago in China. So it's putting the squeeze on them. And don't forget, these people in China that are working in these factories are very poor people in the first place. Travel long distances, live in the factories.
Yeah, they live in the factories for almost a whole year, right?
Nine months.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
It is. So, you know, even if, let's just say that China stopped importing from us at all $120 billion that they import from us, that is 0.5% of our economy.
Ah, so that's a good context.
What we give to China in $540 billion is such a bigger portion of their economy, which is why this is hurting them. So
they have I think what you're saying to me is that they have a lot more to lose than we do.
Yes.
And I think, I don't think anybody's ever explained it to me, just like you did just now, where you're saying it's 0.5% of our economy. That really causes me to think, well, wait a minute, that's not a really big deal for us.
Right. And you know, you have a lot of the liberals complaining about, oh my gosh, you know, look at the prices that are getting raised to the American people because of these tariffs. If you have a basket of goods in the store, it might be 2 cents. So it's not a huge amount. The tariffs are not a huge amount. They can be, if you're in business like I am, it can make a difference on an order. But you know what? Everybody that I work with, as far as clients, they get it, and they haven't complained about it, and it's not been an issue. So you have the people that are crying about it, the Chuck Schumers of the world, the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, who it doesn't affect an iota, right? But the people that really are in the trenches, like the small businesses and the businesses
and the farmers. What about the farmers?
The farmers, absolutely are getting hurt because, well, what happened with China is that China promised to buy more food.
Like soybeans and corn.
And they did not. And not only did they not buy more, but they stopped buying it. So they didn't keep their word. Imagine our surprise at that. So that's why Trump went and put even more pressure on them. And I agree with that. And I don't know if you happen to notice today, but in the news was actually a lot of our farmers, and I love farmers and I love our heartland. They are for this. They think that President Trump is doing the right thing. So they're the guys that are really, really, really in the trenches. And what Trump is doing is he's subsidizing them to get them through this, and that is the right thing to do. So, yes, now what also has happened is the stock market got very nervous about this.
Well, it dropped 800 points.
And And we'll see where that goes. And people are saying, oh my gosh, we're going to have a recession. Well, it depends on how they handle this in the government. It depends on, you know, what they do with this information. If they run with their tail between their legs and go too far in one direction, yes, they can cause a recession. But if they, you know, stay the course and make small adjustments, they will be fine. So anyway, that's the...
Can I ask you one more question? Okay. So it's a market, right? You got to keep things simple for me, okay? So it's a market, but it's an international market. So if we, let's hypothesize the worst, okay? And say that, let's say China just stops doing all business with the United States. Are there other countries around the world that we can go to still have the cheap goods that we purchase? So like,
absolutely.
So like Indonesia and Vietnam,
absolutely,
and South Korea,
yes,
and India and a host of all other nations which would pop up to fill that void. Isn't that really what the market is all about?
It is what the market's about, and that's not going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is China cannot afford it to happen.
Okay.
So we're there. But, you know, I want to talk about something completely different, and I'm going to take you a little bit by surprise.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to me about China. I appreciate that.
Hey, I want to switch it up a little bit, Ron.
Okay.
I want to talk about something kind of fun, kind of interesting, kind of a fact you don't know. And we're going to talk about elephants.
Elephants? What do you know about elephants?
Well, I don't know a lot about elephants, but I think they're fascinating. And, when you used to go to the zoo, didn't you always have to go see the elephants? They're just so cool.
It used to be the first thing I used to go see.
And there's some that have great big giant ears and some that have little ears. And, you know,
African versus Indian elephants, correct?
Yeah, I just think that they're fascinating. I've never ridden on one. Probably never will. But
I've never even touched one.
No, oh, I have. I've definitely fed them.
Oh, really?
And I've fed them peanuts. My dad used to give us peanuts to feed them. But actually, you're going to learn something about that as well. So I want to tell you about 30 little fun facts about elephants that everybody should know.
Now, okay, so this is not a Dr. Round test, right? You're just going to tell me about these things.
I'll try not to
to embarrass me?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Okay, well, the first thing is that elephants can tell your gender, age, and ethnicity from your voice.
I did not know
they
that.
They have very
How
big
do you
brains.
Know they know that?
And they're very intelligent animals.
Wait a minute. Did you say that they have very big brains?
Sure.
Okay. I didn't think they were significantly smart animals.
They are significantly smart.
Okay.
Significantly smart animals. And they are so clever that they can determine all those things I just said, your gender, age, and ethnicity from your voice. And they pick it up from acoustics that are in your voice. And researchers think that they use this skill to identify possible human threats and adjust their behavior accordingly. And, you know, you have seen these things in circus elephants and things where they do these kinds of tricks with elephants. And I'm sure that you can see it there. But they are extremely smart. And they, you know, I guess they use those big ears for something. They listen well, right? Also, some elephants can recognize themselves in a mirror. Not just that they're seeing an image of an animal or another elephant, but that it is themselves.
How do you know that?
Well, because that's what the Academy of Sciences says, so I'm believing them.
Okay.
They study elephants a lot, and they have a level of self-awareness, just like dolphins and whales, that only these certain mammals have that are very intelligent.
Let me ask you this question. There is an old idiom that says that elephants never forget. Is there anything in your research that discusses an elephant's memory?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I haven't gotten that far in the research. I'll let you know when I get there. I
did not mean to put you on the spot. Please continue.
So elephants, although they have giant ears, Ron, they also can pick up noises with their feet. They register low-frequency rumbles caused by other animals up to 20 miles away.
No way.
Absolutely.
And that would be for threat protection, right?
Well, they
Situational awareness?
Absolutely. They're sensing underground vibrations through their feet. Seismic waves can travel from their toenails to their ear via bone conduction, or what they call somatosensory receptors in the foot, similar to the ones that they have in their trunk. So they're just amazing animals. You see them, but you don't think of all these little details about them. And you know, the elephants live in very, very hot and sunny climates, right?
Yes, I do.
Well, they have to protect their skin from harmful UV rays, just like a person
sure.
would.
Sure, that's why they take mud baths and things like that, right? And they throw dirt on each other,
that is what they do.
Other,
they
right?
use sand as a natural sunscreen. Mm-hmm. They pick it up and throw it on themselves. They throw it on their babies as well when they're sleeping. So
I knew that. And you know how I knew that as well? From our bucking bulls that do the same thing.
They love to do that, don't they? Now, most elephants have, speaking of skin, they have gray skin. And sometimes they appear to be brown, but they actually appear to be brown because of the reddish sand that they cover themselves with. But when Asian elephants get older, they can start to lose that pigment, and their bodies tend to turn pink.
Oh, I've seen.
So you've
I've
ever
seen
heard
the
of the saying
splotchy,
of a pink elephant?
Yeah. But I've actually seen the splotchy pink elephants before. So now that,
well,
that
a
makes
splotchy,
sense to me.
A baby splotchy pink elephant could be an albino.
Okay.
But as they're older, they just tend to lose their pigment. So.
How long is the gestation period for an elephant mother?
Well, I think I'm going to get to that if you could have some patience.
Oh, okay. Darn it. I didn't want to take it away from you. Go ahead.
Well, and just like human beings are right and left-handed, elephants are right or left tusks. They use their tusks, which are actually part of their incisors or their teeth, their big teeth, in lots of handy ways for like digging and fighting. But they will tend to use one more than the other.
Interesting.
Just like you use your right or left hand
right.
more than the other. So, and they call that, actually, they call that the master tusk. And those same tusks never stop growing their entire life. So you'll see a very old elephant will have very, very long tusks. But they grow about 7 inches a year.
Well, that's a lot.
Okay,
so, boy, when you see those big tusked elephants, you can, I guess, kind of gauge how old the elephant is, right? Is that one of the ways
yeah,
that they,
oh, absolutely.
At least with a male elephant, because yeah. the females don't have tusks, right?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think only the male elephants have tusks.
Well, and when elephants are trying to find a mate, and they're in lust, they actually call it must, M-U-S-T-H. So we call it lust, they call it must. And they have a high level of testosterone, and they produce pheromones, which gives them a scent, kind of a cologne, to attract the females.
Now, do they get kind of angry and violent? I thought I read that someplace, that they get, you know, because they're, you
well,
know, they're going to be mating.
If somebody's messing with their girl, they absolutely
okay,
would. Yeah,
there you
of course.
Go.
Okay. But they will tend, you know, during this mating time, to kind of flap their ears to, you know, get that scent going out to the ladies to see which one's going to like them.
I do the same thing.
Yeah, I see you flapping those ears. One female elephant in a herd, and by the way, they're very much herd animals, that's the matriarch. She is the leader of the herd, and she is responsible for all of the offspring in the herd. Everybody else's kids, she decides what those kids do and don't do, and her decisions affect the survival of that group, such as fleeing danger and seeking out food sources.
Wow, I thought it was a bull.
Woman power.
Well, I thought it was a bull elephant, but that's not right.
No.
Wow.
No, it's always the woman, Ron.
Oh, yeah. No.
You should have known.
Thanks for reminding me.
And elephants, you know, they have their trunk, and they, some people think that they use their trunks kind of like a straw, but they don't. They actually, that trunk contains 100,000 muscles, and they can hold more than 2 gallons of water, and they deliver the water to their mouth. They kind of suck it up and
well, isn't
put
that
it in
like
their mouth.
Isn't that like a straw?
Well,
If they suck it up and it goes into their mouth?
They suck it up into their trunks and they spray it into their mouth. So they don't...
Oh, you understand? I see what you... Okay, yeah, okay, that's different. Okay.
Yeah. So 2.2, about 2.25 gallons of water can go into their trunks. And another thing that they do besides deliver water is they strip off leaves with their trunks. And they also make a signature trumpet sound with
okay,
their trunks.
Okay, now I have a question. I don't know if you know the answer. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. But speaking of the trumpet noise, does the trumpet noise come from the trunk or does it come out of their mouth?
It looks as though it comes out of their trunk. And really, it comes from their trunk.
Okay.
It does not come from their mouth. Oh. Yeah. Yep. So, okay. Now, elephants, speaking of their trunk, they also have a finger on their trunk. And
that's on the very end.
On the very end.
I've
and
seen it.
And it actually allows them to grasp things and pick them up, so much like you do with your hands.
Right.
And that's why the trunk's, the tip is referred to as the finger.
Okay.
Their diet is made up of grasses mostly, mm-hmm. and they spend about 16 hours a day foraging for food. And so they eat bamboo, tree bark, roots, leaves, fruit, seeds, and flowers.
So they're basically vegetarians.
Yeah, 300 to 600 pounds every day.
No way.
Yeah. A lot of that goes actually through their system without even being digested. But what do they not like to eat? What really is not one of their favorite food?
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Then why? You know what? I knew that. I read that someplace. And I thought about, just like you, all the times I'd gone to the zoo and bought peanuts to feed the elephants. So what's up with that?
Well, people, I don't know why people give them peanuts, but if you think about the elephant's diet, a peanut has entirely too much protein in it for them. They are really vegetarian.
Kind of grass animals.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. Herbivores.
So it doesn't make sense to give them peanuts. But anyway, there's a lot of interesting things. You know, one more thing is that an elephant's skin can weigh as much as 2,000 pounds and grow as thick as an inch. So, you know, just their skin alone, the actual elephants grow over 9 feet tall, weighing anywhere from 9,000 to 16,500 pounds.
That's incredible. Linda, before we call it an evening, can you answer the ultimate elephant question?
Probably not, but try me out.
Where do elephants go to die?
I don't know.
Did you ever hear that? That person went where elephants go to die. Where is that?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Well, see, neither do I.
Oh, well, I never heard it either.
Well, they're doing the elephant thing tonight, so I thought I'd just ask
but,
you.
You know, they are the closest thing that we have today to the dinosaur world.
I agree with that. Sure, yep. That in rhinoceri.
And, I love them. They are the symbol of the Conservative Party.
I knew you'd try to throw something political in there. Hey, well, listen, are you ready to hit the sack?
I am.
Okay. I will trumpet us out of here.
Okay.